Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. On Wednesday, President Obama addressed the nation to announce a four-part strategy for stemming the tide of violence waged by ISIL, the terrorist group that has declared an Islamic State or caliphate in portions of Iraq and Syria and threatening other nations. We believe that on matters as important as war and peace, it's very important for the American people to hear such messages unfiltered, unlike other media that picks and chooses which parts you should hear. So we'll be broadcasting the president's full speech today, along with reaction by a leader in the local Iraqi community, right after we bring you a few local news bulletins and announcements. Today you'll hear about a bill in Congress to grant asylum to Iraqi refugees. We have news about a debate in the 50th Congressional District here in East County coming up between Congressman Duncan D. Hunter and his opponent, James Kimber. And we'll have a report on a visit to San Diego Thursday by California's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and what she has to say about the court system and our schools today. The county has issued its local crop report. Find out what's growing across our region in our agricultural update. In Greenscene, hear about the chilling impacts of climate change on birds. Our sports report will inform you about a documentary film championing the heart-wrenching story of an East County sports hero, Joe Roth, former quarterback at Grossmont College and the UC Berkeley football team. You'll hear about a new resolution introduced by Assemblywoman Shirley Weber from San Diego to boost school attendance. We'll tell you about a new attraction for motorists and tourists in the mountain towns of East County that will be the first of its kind in Southern California. Today, we are also delighted to debut a new arts and music spotlight feature hosted by theater critic and writer David Codden. David will be interviewing a representative from the Moxie Theater about its upcoming anniversary season and this theater's special focus on showcasing works by women playwrights. On Destination East County, we'll share some tips on exciting festivals and events this weekend and next, from an attempt to break a world record for fireworks to a kids' care festival with free checkups for children. Plus, our weekend weather outlook will give you details on just how hot it's going to get out there. Have a great weekend, stay cool, and be sure to stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
Local Congressman Juan Vargas has introduced a bill to grant asylum for religious minorities displaced by ISIS, or Islamic State terrorists in Iraq. The bill would raise the current limit of 70,000 people who can be granted asylum in the United States from that region. It would also waive some paperwork and identification requirements, since many refugees were forced to flee in haste to avoid being killed by the terrorists who were beheading people who refused to convert to Islam. Local Iraqi Christian leader Mark Arabo and Bishop Sarhad Jamo from the Chaldean Catholic Diocese of St. Peter's in El Cajon traveled to Washington, D.C. this week to lobby for the measure. Arabo has spent weeks painstakingly collecting documentation on tens of thousands of displaced Iraqis in order to provide names, faces, and stories to show the reality of this tragedy. In a statement sent to East County Magazine, Arabo said, "What began 10 weeks ago has finally culminated in a piece of comprehensive legislation that will grant Iraqi Christians the chance for new life within the United States." He adds that resolutions passed in both California's legislature and the U.S. Congress show that the public is accepting towards the idea of granting a home to these refugees. A fundraiser held in El Cajon recently raised over $500,000 to help the refugees. Arabo told the UT San Diego that many Iraqi immigrants living here, as well as some longtime San Diego residents, have told him they are willing to open their own homes to take in refugees. He concludes, "We are confident that with the continued support of the citizens of San Diego, we will not only be able to give a hope to the hopeless, but a state to the stateless." If you would like to provide a home for a refugee or refugee family from Iraq, or donate to help relief efforts to help these refugees, you can sign up at Minority Humanitarian Foundation website at minorityhf.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a local politics report. A debate has been announced between Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter and his Democratic opponent, James Kimber. The debate is set for Friday, September 26th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Cuyamaca College's Performing Arts Center in Rancho San Diego. Both candidates are veterans, so the debate will be sponsored by two military and veterans organizations, Veterans Campaign and the National Association for Uniformed Services.
You may think avocados are the big deal, but ornamental trees and shrubs are still the king of the crop. That, according to the county's just-released annual crop report. It shows ornamental trees and shrubs are the county's number one crop. Next is indoor flowering plants. In all, the local ag scene is worth $1.85 billion, a 6% increase from the previous year.
In a recovering economy, this is a testimony of the determination and resourcefulness of our local growers and all who support our thriving agricultural community.
Farmers also today have more places to sell their goods. We have more farmers markets in the county than ever before. And the public is really excited and anxious to get their hands on locally grown produce. And they can get that at farmers markets. Some of the stores, the grocery stores, the big chains also are having more organic produce and locally grown in their markets available to the public. It's all about living well, San Diego, eating right, and having good nutrition. And we're doing it right here in San Diego County.
If you're wondering, avocados brought in a whopping $200 million. The report shows there are more than 5,700 farms here, more than any county in the U.S., and 27% are operated by women. In the County News Center, I'm Michael Russo.
California's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Tani Cantil-Sacoye, addressed UCSD alumni on Thursday in San Diego. She emphasized a critical need to teach civics to students so that people can better understand what the judicial branch does, she said, and why we do it. Students leaving high school are not getting a civics education on how the three branches of government work, said the Chief Justice, adding that her own daughter only got one semester of civics education in her last semester of high school. But the problem isn't just with young people. The Chief Justice said that a member of the California legislature, who is also a lawyer, told her that judges should answer to those above them in the judicial branch, but that ultimately the Chief Justice should answer to the legislature. Now, it's a principle of U.S. government enshrined in our Constitution that the three branches, judiciary, legislative, and executive, are equal and independent of each other. The Chief Justice found it troubling that a legislator, a decision maker, did not understand that.
But it really pointed out the problem that our young people, who are our leaders in training, and our decision makers in Sacramento, had failed to understand that democracy is comprised of three co-equal branches of government, and democracy, as the old saying goes, is not a machine that reproduces itself. It is a conscious effort that must be taught to every generation. And if a generation escapes the knowledge of civics, they fail to understand the world around them, how decisions are being made. They fail to understand how they can change the world.
This is a crisis that needs to be solved, she believes. Democracy is something that has to be taught to each succeeding generation. An effort is now underway to bring civics education back to California classrooms, the High Court's top justice said. She referred to a report titled Revitalizing K-12 Civic Learning in California, which details the project to bring civics back into the core curriculum. She also spoke about the impacts of budget cuts on the court system in California. A well-funded judiciary with enough courtrooms to handle cases is important for businesses, the Chief Justice observed. Businesses rely on contracts and other well-established aspects of law and precedent. Having cases frozen due to an inadequately funded system can and does make businesses flounder. The Chief Justice concluded by emphasizing the importance of an independent judiciary, that decisions by the courts are not made for their popularity, but on precedent and law, and that maintaining independence of the courts is essential.
A majority of Californians, 58%, believe that the United States should offer shelter to unaccompanied children from Central America who have crossed our border fleeing gang violence in their homelands. A new field poll found that 58% of Californians support sheltering and supporting these children while their long-term status is being determined. A new field poll has found only a third would support deportation, with others undecided. Most Californians, 55%, would also support President Obama issuing an executive order to implement policies to deal with the children if Congress fails to act. Voters were less supportive of Obama taking executive action to help 11 million undocumented immigrant workers already living in America if Congress fails to do so. Statewide, nearly half, 46%, would support such action, while 36% would oppose and 18% have no opinion. The field poll surveyed 1,280 registered voters in six languages and dialects. Support for sheltering and helping immigrant children was strongest, 70%, among Latinos, but also had support from the majority of white, non-Hispanic voters. The highest support came from Democrats. Nearly three-fourths of all Democrats polled, 72%, would offer help to these youngsters versus only 35% of Republicans who would support shelter for the children on even a temporary basis. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a weekend weather report. Scorching temperatures are forecast across our region. Temperatures in San Diego's inland valleys could reach 105 degrees, while desert heat could soar to 110 degrees on Sunday and Monday. Mountains may reach 100, and even coastal communities could have 90-degree temperatures. Greg Martin with the National Weather Service says that excessive heat warning conditions are expected in the next few days, so be sure to check on your older friends and relatives and seek out some air-conditioned locations if you need to. Avoid strenuous outdoor activities and be sure to carry plenty of water if you must be outside and when you're traveling. Don't leave children, pets, or elderly people in a hot car, not even for a few minutes, since heat stroke can occur rapidly. Now there is some good news on the horizon. An influx of moisture from Tropical Cyclone Odile could bring slow cooling on Tuesday and more cooling Wednesday and Thursday. As Odile breezes in, humidity will increase and we could see thunderstorms and heavy rainfall locally. And that's welcome relief here in drought-stricken Southern California.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. In Washington Wednesday night at the White House, President Obama addressed the nation, laying out his strategy for dealing with the terrorist group ISIL, which has declared an Islamic State across portions of Iraq and Syria and now threatens other nations. The president called for unity among all Americans, Congress, and nations around the world to deal with this growing threat. And now, without further ado, here is the president's speech in its entirety.
My fellow Americans, tonight I want to speak to you about what the United States will do with our friends and allies to degrade and ultimately destroy the terrorist group known as ISIL. As Commander-in-Chief, my highest priority is the security of the American people. Over the last several years, we have consistently taken the fight to terrorists who threaten our country. We took out Osama bin Laden and much of Al-Qaeda's leadership in Afghanistan and Pakistan. We've targeted Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen and recently eliminated the top commander of its affiliate in Somalia. We've done so while bringing more than 140,000 American troops home from Iraq and drawing down our forces in Afghanistan, where our combat mission will end later this year. Thanks to our military and counterterrorism professionals, America is safer. Still, we continue to face a terrorist threat. We can't erase every trace of evil from the world, and small groups of killers have the capacity to do great harm. That was the case before 9/11, and that remains true today. And that's why we must remain vigilant as threats emerge. At this moment, the greatest threats come from the Middle East and North Africa, where radical groups exploit grievances for their own gain. And one of those groups is ISIL, which calls itself the Islamic State. Now let's make two things clear. ISIL is not Islamic. No religion condones the killing of innocents, and the vast majority of ISIL's victims have been Muslim. And ISIL is certainly not a state. It was formerly Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Iraq and has taken advantage of sectarian strife and Syria's civil war to gain territory on both sides of the Iraq-Syrian border. It is recognized by no government, nor by the people it subjugates. ISIL is a terrorist organization, pure and simple, and it has no vision other than the slaughter of all who stand in its way. In a region that has known so much bloodshed, these terrorists are unique in their brutality. They execute captured prisoners. They kill children. They enslave, rape, and force women into marriage. They threatened a religious minority with genocide. And in acts of barbarism, they took the lives of two American journalists, Jim Foley and Stephen Sotloff. So ISIL poses a threat to the people of Iraq and Syria and the broader Middle East, including American citizens, personnel, and facilities. If left unchecked, these terrorists could pose a growing threat beyond that region, including to the United States. While we have not yet detected specific plotting against our homeland, ISIL leaders have threatened America and our allies. Our intelligence community believes that thousands of foreigners, including Europeans and some Americans, have joined them in Syria and Iraq. Trained and battle-hardened, these fighters could try to return to their home countries and carry out deadly attacks. I know many Americans are concerned about these threats. Tonight, I want you to know that the United States of America is meeting them with strength and resolve. Last month, I ordered our military to take targeted action against ISIL to stop its advances. Since then, we've conducted more than 150 successful airstrikes in Iraq. These strikes have protected American personnel and facilities, killed ISIL fighters, destroyed weapons, and given space for Iraqi and Kurdish forces to reclaim key territory. These strikes have also helped save the lives of thousands of innocent men, women, and children. But this is not our fight alone. American power can make a decisive difference, but we cannot do for Iraqis what they must do for themselves. Nor can we take the place of Arab partners in securing their region. And that's why I've insisted that additional U.S. action depended upon Iraqis forming an inclusive government, which they have now done in recent days. So tonight, with a new Iraqi government in place, and following consultations with allies abroad and Congress at home, I can announce that America will lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat. Our objective is clear. We will degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL through a comprehensive and sustained counterterrorism strategy. First, we will conduct a systematic campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists. Working with the Iraqi government, we will expand our efforts beyond protecting our own people and humanitarian missions, so that we're hitting ISIL targets as Iraqi forces go on offense. Moreover, I've made it clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven. Second, we will increase our support to forces fighting these terrorists on the ground. In June, I deployed several hundred American service members to Iraq to assess how we can best support Iraqi security forces. Now that those teams have completed their work and Iraq has formed a government, we will send an additional 475 service members to Iraq. As I've said before, these American forces will not have a combat mission. We will not get dragged into another ground war in Iraq. But they are needed to support Iraqi and Kurdish forces with training, intelligence, and equipment. We'll also support Iraq's efforts to stand up National Guard units to help Sunni communities secure their own freedom from ISIL's control. Across the border in Syria, we have ramped up our military assistance to the Syrian opposition. Tonight, I call on Congress again to give us additional authorities and resources to train and equip these fighters. In the fight against ISIL, we cannot rely on an Assad regime that terrorizes its own people, a regime that will never regain the legitimacy it has lost. Instead, we must strengthen the opposition as the best counterweight to extremists like ISIL, while pursuing the political solution necessary to solve Syria's crisis once and for all. Third, we will continue to draw on our substantial counterterrorism capabilities to prevent ISIL attacks. Working with our partners, we will redouble our efforts to cut off its funding, improve our intelligence, strengthen our defenses, counter its warped ideology, and stem the flow of foreign fighters into and out of the Middle East. And in 2 weeks, I will chair a meeting of the UN Security Council to further mobilize the international community around this effort. Fourth, we will continue to provide humanitarian assistance to innocent civilians who've been displaced by this terrorist organization. This includes Sunni and Shia Muslims who are at grave risk, as well as tens of thousands of Christians and other religious minorities. We cannot allow these communities to be driven from their ancient homelands. So this is our strategy. And in each of these four parts of our strategy, America will be joined by a broad coalition of partners. Already, allies are flying planes with us over Iraq, sending arms and assistance to Iraqi security forces and the Syrian opposition, sharing intelligence and providing billions of dollars in humanitarian aid. Secretary Kerry was in Iraq today, meeting with the new government and supporting their efforts to promote unity. And in the coming days, he will travel across the Middle East and Europe to enlist more partners in this fight, especially Arab nations who can help mobilize Sunni communities in Iraq and Syria to drive these terrorists from their lands. This is American leadership at its best. We stand with people who fight for their own freedom, and we rally other nations on behalf of our common security and common humanity. My administration has also secured bipartisan support for this approach here at home. I have the authority to address the threat from ISIL, but I believe we are strongest as a nation when the President and Congress work together. So I welcome congressional support for this effort in order to show the world that Americans are united in confronting this danger. Now, it will take time to eradicate a cancer like ISIL. And any time we take military action, there are risks involved, especially to the servicemen and women who carry out these missions. But I want the American people to understand how this effort will be different from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It will not involve American combat troops fighting on foreign soil. This counterterrorism campaign will be waged through a steady, relentless effort to take out ISIL wherever they exist using our air power and our support for partners' forces on the ground. This strategy of taking out terrorists who threaten us while supporting partners on the front lines is one that we have successfully pursued in Yemen and Somalia for years, and it is consistent with the approach I outlined earlier this year, to use force against anyone who threatens America's core interests, but to mobilize partners wherever possible to address broader challenges to international order. My fellow Americans, we live in a time of great change. Tomorrow marks 13 years since our country was attacked. Next week marks 6 years since our economy suffered its worst setback since the Great Depression. Yet, despite these shocks, through the pain we felt and the grueling work required to bounce back, America is better positioned today to seize the future than any other nation on earth. Our technology companies and universities are unmatched. Our manufacturing and auto industries are thriving. Energy independence is closer than it's been in decades. For all the work that remains, our businesses are in the longest uninterrupted stretch of job creation in our history. Despite all the divisions and discord within our democracy, I see the grit and determination and common goodness of the American people every single day. And that makes me more confident than ever about our country's future. A broad American leadership is the one constant in an uncertain world. It is America that has the capacity and the will to mobilize the world against terrorists. It is America that has rallied the world against Russian aggression and in support of the Ukrainian people's right to determine their own destiny. It is America, our scientists, our doctors, our know-how that can help contain and cure the outbreak of Ebola. It is America that helped remove and destroy Syria's declared chemical weapons so that they can't pose a threat to the Syrian people or the world again. And it is America that is helping Muslim communities around the world, not just in the fight against terrorism, but in the fight for opportunity and tolerance and a more hopeful future. America, our endless blessings bestow an enduring burden. But as Americans, we welcome our responsibility to lead. From Europe to Asia, from the far reaches of Africa to war-torn capitals of the Middle East, we stand for freedom, for justice, for dignity. These are values that have guided our nation since its founding. Tonight, I ask for your support in carrying that leadership forward. I do so as a commander-in-chief who could not be prouder of our men and women in uniform. Pilots who bravely fly in the face of danger above the Middle East, and service members who support our partners on the ground. When we helped prevent the massacre of civilians trapped on a distant mountain, here's what one of them said. We owe our American friends our lives. Our children will always remember that there was someone who felt our struggle and made a long journey to protect innocent people. That is the difference we make in the world. And our own safety, our own security, depends upon our willingness to do what it takes to defend this nation and uphold the values that we stand for. Timeless ideals that will endure long after those who offer only hate and destruction have been vanquished from the earth. May God bless our troops. And may God bless the United States of America.
After the president's speech, we reached out to Mark Arabo here in San Diego, who is a national leader in the Iraqi Christian community, including some 60,000 Iraqi Christians who live in our region, mostly in East County. He told us that the Iraqi Christian community stands by the remarks made by President Obama in his address to the nation. Mr. Arabo adds, "I will continue to work with members of Congress and the White House to ensure that more is done to secure safety for those religious minorities who wish to stay in Iraq and safe passage out of the country for those left stateless by ISIL." He emphasized, "The policy against ISIL will be one that shifts from containment to extermination." Arabo voiced hope that the commitment made by America and the international community will ultimately rid the Middle East of ISIL terrorists and enable the region to begin the long road to recovery. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight. I'm your host, David Cotty. My guest today is Jennifer Eve Thorne, Associate Artistic Director of Moxie Theater. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi.
Jennifer, what is your definition of Moxie, And how does it tie into the theater's artistic mission?
Moxie is a great word that you don't hear used as often as it used to be, but I'm hoping it's coming back into fashion. And it means to have courage, grit, or gumption. Grit and gumption are also words you don't hear very often anymore, but the word really describes our company well and the type of work that we like to do.
Tell me a little bit about the founding of the company.
Moxie Theater was founded in 2004 by myself and three other theater artists in San Diego, Joanne Glover, Liev Kellgren, and Delicia Turner Sonnenberg.
Now, in 10 years, that's a long time. How has the company evolved over that 10 years?
Well, the company has grown in terms of size. There was originally four of us, and gosh, now I think we're at 10 or 11 on staff, and so that's been exciting. And we have increased our subscription base and our audiences, and we now have a permanent home, which we didn't have when we started.
That's right. The first 5 years, you were kind of nomadic. How did you happen to get that permanent home that you wanted so badly?
Well, you know, it was a choice initially to begin producing without a home. It was important to us to be able to stay tied to the type of work that we wanted to do without worrying about rent every year. And so by producing at established theater companies around the city, doing a season there, that allowed us to do that. And then just about at the beginning of our fifth season, we talked to another fabulous San Diego theater company, Signet Theater, who was ready to move out of their space, and they wanted to make sure that the space was handed over to another company who they believed in and who they supported. And so they let us know, and that's how we found the space we're in now.
Signet, of course, moved to Old Town. For our readers who don't know where Moxie is, tell us.
We are on El Cajon Boulevard in the Rolando area, right near San Diego State, on the border of La Mesa.
And there is a pizza place in the strip mall.
Yeah, that comes in handy after late night rehearsals.
Okay. So what special insights? This goes with the mission of Moxie. What special insights, Jennifer, do you believe that women playwrights bring to contemporary theater?
Our mission at Moxie is to create more diverse and honest images of women for our culture. And the way that we focus on doing that, one of the primary ways, is through the production of mostly female playwrights. We've done that for a reason. One reason is because the national average shows that only 16% of all plays getting professionally produced are written by female playwrights. But also because we felt like in order to create more diverse images of women for our culture, we had to be telling the stories that were coming from women. And so even though we focus on producing work that sort of defies stereotypes about women, for example, one of the shows this season is Enron, which is based on the collapse of Enron and the financial crisis, which certainly is not what people think women are writing about. But that's the point of, I think, why Moxie exists. We want you to think differently about women's work and what women, what female artists are interested in exploring and writing about.
Do you, through your community outreach, your education outreach, find a way to encourage young girls to be involved and be interested in theater?
I'm glad that you asked that, because these last few years, the growth of our education program has been one of the most exciting developments at Moxie for me. The School of Moxie teaches artists, both male and female, professionals and beginners. But one of the really incredible things that's begun to happen is young female artists, or just young women who are exploring who they are and what they want to do in the world, are finding their way to Moxie and are taking our classes and then signing on to be interns. They work on our productions. They work on things in the administrative office. And we think that those young women, we've got several of them interning with us right now, those are the future of Moxie.
Speaking of the future, your big night is September 20th, opening night of the 10th season. Tell us what we're going to see.
You're going to see a really great new play called A Discourse on the Wonders of the Invisible World by Liz Duffy Adams, who is one of Moxie's favorite playwrights. And we're really excited to share this new play with San Diego.
And Liz Duffy Adams has kind of a connective history with Moxie.
She does, that the first play that Moxie ever produced was also by Liz Duffy Adams, and that was titled Dog Act, and it actually developed sort of a cult following. We had people, we added performances at midnight. We had full audiences lining up to see, you know, a midnight show of a first play of a brand new theater company. And part of, I think, why we've been successful is producing playwrights like Liz, who are really on the forefront of American theater and writing really new, exciting work. So we decided she was the first playwright we produced 10 years ago. So why not celebrate by producing her newest play for our 10th anniversary?
Let's go even further into the future. 10 years from now, where do you expect Moxie to be?
It's been our goal since we were founded to pass Moxie on. So while I think that I'll still be involved with Moxie in 10 years, I certainly hope that the next artistic director is in the wings, learning the ropes and ready to add her own artistic sensibility to the company. I think that Moxie should grow and exist in perpetuity, and that those leadership roles, the ones that myself and Delicia and Joanne have now, should be handed on. And I look forward to, you know, coming back and seeing productions and congratulating those artists on what they've done with Moxie.
Good luck with the new show and the new season, and thank you for visiting with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is Miriam Raftery with a sports report. A new documentary film titled Don't Quit, The Joe Roth Story, tells the tale of an East County champion. Quarterback Joe Roth, an El Cajon native, led the Grossmont College Griffins to its first state championship back in 1974. He was diagnosed with melanoma, a deadly form of skin cancer, but he courageously battled the disease while triumphing both on and off the field at the high school and later college level, all without telling friends or teammates about his condition. After he graduated from Grossmont College, he helped the University of California, Berkeley Golden Bears share a Pacific Eight crown with UCLA. In 1976, Joe Roth was a leading candidate to win the coveted Heisman Trophy as college football's top quarterback. Surgery had halted his disease, but it returned in 1976. Grossmont coach Dave Johnson said Roth confided in him at the end of that season, but he didn't tell anyone because, the coach recalled, it's the way Joe wanted it. After doctors told the ailing quarterback that he had just 1 month to live, he went on to play in the Hula Bowl before losing his battle with cancer in 1977 at age 21. Two UC Berkeley graduates produced the film. One of them, Phil Schaff, called the work a heroic story, adding, Joe didn't tell anyone he was sick during the season because he wouldn't make any excuses. The fact that no one knew he was dying is the greatest secret in the history of college sports. Roth's uniform was retired by his Berkeley team. Every year since then, the Golden Bears have played a Joe Roth memorial game, donating a portion of proceeds to a charity. Now, the film honoring his life, Don't Quit, The Joe Roth Story, will be shown at the Carlsbad Film Festival starting September 18th and will receive an honor at the Film Fest on September 20th. For more information about Joe Roth and the film honoring his life, you can visit the film's website at joerothfilm.com.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Ed Barreno with today's Green Scene Report. 3/5 of all bird species in North America are at risk from climate change, including the bald eagle. That's the disturbing conclusion of a study released by the National Audubon Society and funded in part by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The study looked at over 500 bird species and found that 300 of them in North America could have their habitats negatively impacted by climate change. That means the birds will have to adapt to new habitats with different rainfall levels and temperatures in order to survive. The bald eagle, our national symbol, could lose 75% of its habitat by the year 2080. Other species at risk include trumpeter swans, loons, and woodpeckers. Ironically, industrial-scale wind and desert solar projects intended to produce clean energy and reduce greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change are also turning out to be large-scale killers of birds. Blades on wind turbines have been responsible for killing numerous eagles and other birds of prey, while the Ivanpah Solar Facility's state-of-the-art technology is burning birds alive, including migratory waterfowl. So America's birds face a catch-22 situation. If the study's predictions are correct, many are doomed by climate change, but also by the green energy projects touted as climate change solutions. Study authors hope the results can help federal wildlife officials create new strategies to conserve these bird species at risk and the habitats on which they depend.
This is Miriam Raftery with news about a creative new attraction coming to our backcountry. Quilt trails highlight the unique culture of communities, display historical art forms, and encourage tourism. Over 130 quilt trails exist across the United States, and soon the Julian Backcountry Quilt Trail will become the first one in Southern California. A quilt trail is a driving route along which property owners have installed wooden quilt blocks. The Julian Woman's Club is sponsoring, organizing, and executing this project, which will extend at least 30 miles in every direction from the town of Julian. An official ribbon-cutting ceremony for the Julian Backcountry Quilt Trail is planned for Thursday, September 25th at 11 a.m. at Winola Pizza and Bistro in Julian. San Diego County Supervisor Diane Jacob will participate, and the public is invited to share in this historic event. The quilt blocks are typically 8x8 feet or 4x4 feet square replicas of creative quilt blocks chosen by the property owners to represent some aspect of their lives or their creative preferences. Phase one of the project involved installing 7 quilt blocks, all visible along rural highways in our backcountry. They are Boots on the Tulloch Ranch Barn between Julian and Ramona, Indian Rug on the Ponchetti Ranch Barn near Santa Isabel, Winola Apples on Winola Pizza's Red Barn in Winola, Rooster on the Winola Junction Antiques and Collectibles store, Apple Core Quilt and Honey Bee on the Farm at Winola Flats Produce, and Friendship Square down in Lakeside. Phase two is now being planned to display 12 more quilt blocks. Anyone interested in participating by installing a quilt block on your building visible from a public road can obtain information and an application packet by calling 760-765-1450 or visit the website at julianbackcountryquilttrail.org.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson, and I'm here with Miriam Raftery, who's filling in for Leon on Destination East County this week. This week's Destination East County has some wild events, from the We Like It Wild benefit for Project Wildlife to a wildlife tracking event, a storytelling session, and an effort to break a world record with a spectacular fireworks display. Plus, we'll have previews of future attractions, from a free kids care fest to a music festival in Julian, from theater and concert performances to a Somali Bantu African cultural celebration. We'll have all this and more, so stay tuned for another edition of East County Magazine's Destination East County.
Viejas will attempt to launch the world's largest chain of fireworks, more than 10,000 of them, to celebrate its 23rd anniversary on Friday, September 12th at 8 p.m. You're invited to the festivities near the Viejas Hotel Pool in Alpine to witness the sky come alive with fireworks during this Guinness Book of World Records-setting attempt. You can learn more at viejas.com.
On Saturday, September 13th, starting at 9 a.m., experts in wildlife tracking with the San Diego Tracking Team will guide a 1-mile, 2-hour tour identifying wildlife tracks in Lakeside's River Park Conservancy. To register, visit lakesideriverpark.com.
Project Wildlife invites you to the We Like It Wild benefit event on September 14th from 5 to 8 p.m. This gala will be held at the Pillsbury Ranch in Lakeside, the home of famed wildlife and conservation expert Joan Embry, the San Diego Zoo's ambassador. Joan will serve as host and provide up-close and personal encounters with her exotic animals. We Like It Wild raises critical funds for Project Wildlife's work to rehabilitate local wildlife in need and educate the public on conservation. Guests will also enjoy bidding on unique and adventurous auction items, plus learn about wildlife both locally and around the world. For more information or tickets, you can visit welikeitwild.org.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to take a seat in their amphitheater on September 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. for the third annual Harvest of Stories. Storytellers of San Diego will delight and entertain the audience with nature tales at this family event, which this year also features a sing-along and some dancing. There will be a nominal cost for this event. Opportunity drawings will also be held and refreshments will be served. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
The Backcountry Land Trust will hold its third annual Wine and Cheese Friend Raiser on Saturday, September 13th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Wright's Field in Alpine. The Podunk Poets will provide live music. The event also features a hosted bar, hors d'oeuvres, silent auction, and raffle. Tickets for the Backcountry Land Trust event are available online in advance at bclt.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. The Moxie Theater is launching its 10th anniversary season with opening night September 20th featuring Liz Duffy Adams, A Discourse on the Wonders of the Invisible World. Adams' Dog Act was the very first Moxie Theater show back in 2005, 5 years before the company had even moved into its current Rolando Performance Space just west of La Mesa. For details and tickets, visit moxietheater.org.
You're invited to the 2014 Kids Care Fest, a free, family-oriented event featuring free healthcare screenings. This year, Kids Care Fest will be held on Saturday, September 20th at Briarcrest Park on Wakarusa Street in La Mesa. The event runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Kids Care Fest is presented by the Grossmont Healthcare District, La Mesa Park and Recreation Foundation, and the City of La Mesa. Organizers expect more than 1,000 children will receive free, potentially life-saving healthcare screenings, including hearing, vision, and dental screenings. Free medical information will be available from doctors and pharmacists, plus free kids' fingerprinting from the police. You can also enjoy more free activities, including water safety, inflatable jumps, and pony rides, demonstrations, and displays from law enforcement and fire departments. For more information, visit kidscarefest.org.
A cultural celebration featuring music, dance, and cuisine of San Diego's Somali Bantu community will be held on Saturday, September 20th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the United Domestic Workers of America office, 4855 Seminole Drive, San Diego. All proceeds benefit the Somali Bantu Association of America's programs impacting refugees in our community. For information or tickets, contact 619-206-4000 or visit sbaoa.org.
And for the 45th year, Julian celebrates the end of summer with music. The Julian Music Festival will be held at the Mangini Winery on September 20th from 1 to 8 p.m. This year's event features bluegrass to celebrate the festival's roots, western ballads to remember the past, as well as music by current songwriters and singers. Performers range from cool band Luke performing high-energy favorites to Trails and Rails offering train songs, cowboy tunes, pop, swing, vocal harmonies, and whistling. For tickets and more information, you can visit julianmusicfestival.com.
Hot cars and spicy chili are all a part of the Alpine Kiwanis 2014 annual car show and chili cook-off event, which also features a pancake breakfast. If you've revved up for the festivities on Saturday, September 20th from 7 to 8 p.m., you can visit the Alpine Community Center located at 1830 Alpine Boulevard in Alpine.
Music from the Middle East, a classical string quartet, contemporary tunes from Argentina, and a pop, rock, and soul ensemble are among the performances set for Cuyamaca College's Fall Concert Series beginning September 18th. The fall season gets underway with Kembang Sunda, an Indonesian ensemble performing traditional music from West Java on bronze percussion instruments. A full list of performances and low-cost ticket details can be found at cuyamaca.edu/performingarts.
September 28th is Viejas Days in Alpine, complete with a parade. The parade rolls out at 2 p.m. down Alpine Boulevard to the Alpine Creek Town Center, complete with floats, bands, and plenty of family fun.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. And if you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County Show on KNSJ, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
With the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, wilderness advocates are reflecting on the enormity of the legislation that created the National Wilderness Preservation System, along with the challenges of maintaining current protections against renewed calls for resource extraction and passing new wilderness bills in a gridlocked Congress. Ryan Henson at the California Wilderness Coalition says the system of protection and management established by the Wilderness Act continues to function well in California.
When it passed in 1964, it protected several wilderness areas outright. And then it also established a system that was used in the years since to protect many other places, so that now, today, we have 14 million acres of wilderness in California.
Almost all of California's 149 wilderness areas are on federal public land, managed either by the U.S. Forest Service or the Bureau of Land Management. Henson warns weakening or undoing the Wilderness Act would throw millions of acres of pristine public land into jeopardy by making them vulnerable to resource extraction or destructive recreation.
It wasn't too many months ago that a congressman in California proposed Yosemite National Park and several wilderness areas be opened up to logging. That was just earlier this year.
Henson also says it's easy to forget some high-value recreation areas protected by the Wilderness Act were once slated for development.
There were ski resorts, there were highways, big dams, huge logging projects, mining projects, all sorts of things that could have despoiled that wild country that today is available in its wild condition for everyone to go out and enjoy it.
Wilderness can only be designated by Congress. And despite the resistance to creating new wilderness among many in Congress, Daniel Rossman in the Wilderness Society's Los Angeles office says there is legislation ready to go should the political climate change in Washington.
We should take the long view. Every president since the Act of 64 has passed wilderness protection bills. This current Congress has been a very tough one, but there are places waiting to be protected, from the rugged San Gabriel Mountains just outside of Los Angeles to the majestic California desert to the California coast.
Additional areas proposed for wilderness include a bill to expand protection to California condor habitat along the Central Coast and a wilderness proposal for the Carrizo Plain. I'm Tommy Howe, Public News Service.
I'm John Mattis, investigative guy, host of Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
John Mattis has won 7 Emmy Awards, a Golden Mike, and the Edward R. Murrow Award for exposing fraud and corruption. Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers is produced by the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ed Barena, guest hosting Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers on the East County Magazine radio show. San Diego Gas and Electric Company is warning customers about a wire fraud that has been targeting SDG&E residential and business customers. Reports indicate that individuals are misrepresenting themselves as utility employees by calling customers and threatening to turn off electric and gas service if an immediate payment is not made. Customers are instructed to purchase a prepaid credit or debit card and to call another phone number, where information is then obtained from the card and the cash value is stolen. SDG&E wants to prevent customers from becoming victims of this scheme. SDG&E does not call to ask for credit card information on the phone. Never give your credit card information to any caller. Only provide credit information if you place the call and know who it is that you're calling. If you received a phone call that is suspicious, and if you do have an outstanding balance to resolve, hang up and then call SDG&E at 1-800-411-7343.
California kids are back in school, and now the goal is to keep them going back. State leaders have come together to declare September as School Attendance Awareness Month. Assemblymember Shirley Weber, who authored the recently passed resolution, says the first step is showing up.
So we've got to basically say to parents and kids that attendance is important, that it is something you can do, and having your child ready and available to go to school is extremely important.
Weber was joined by other leaders at the state capitol on Thursday to announce California's involvement in a national initiative to raise awareness around reducing chronic absence in schools. She says the state's estimated 250,000 chronically absent students struggle when they are in the classroom.
And those students, when we track them, we discover that they're also the same children who have issues with behavior, they have issues with academic excellence, they become the ones suspended, expelled, and eventually who drop out of school.
Weber says everyone needs to help reduce chronic absenteeism.
As we ask for teachers to do more and schools to do more, that every parent and every family and every community ought to do more to make sure that every child is in school every day and ready to learn.
State Superintendent Tom Torlakson agrees everyone has a part in preparing California's children for brighter futures. He says California's schools can have the best facilities, materials, and teachers in the world, but no school can reach a child who simply isn't there. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
Rescue Task Force, an international aid group that started here in East County, is sending a multinational team of disaster responders to help Christian refugees displaced in Kurdistan and Erbil by the ISIS or Islamic State terrorists. The Rescue Task Force volunteers will bring medical and dental help along with humanitarian supplies. They'll meet up in California with leaders Gary Bex and Larry Cuttings and then travel to Erbil and trek to northern Kurdistan. To date, 1.2 million people have survived the initial slaughter by ISIS forces and have fled to safe havens in Erbil and Kurdistan, faced with a stark choice of fleeing their homes, converting to Islam, or being beheaded. Most fled with only the clothes on their backs. Bex and his team have been to the scene of major disasters around the world, from earthquakes to tsunamis, but, he told East County Magazine, in our 26 years of responding to disasters of every sort, we have never been called upon for such a task and opportunity to serve such as this. Beck said that escorts and security are in place and local Christian leaders will meet the team to get them to the areas in most need. The team's dentist will bring a mobile dental drill and extraction tools, purchasing other supplies and anesthetics locally. Imagine having an abscessed tooth while fleeing for your life, says Beck. Local volunteers will connect the team with local doctors who are overwhelmed by the massive humanitarian crisis. Tens of thousands of people are packed into churches and public parks in Erbil, where the weather is over 100 degrees, though winter will come soon, bringing new challenges. The team hopes to use donations to buy pharmaceuticals, over-the-counter medications, and relief supplies for makeshift clinics set up in the refugee compounds. They'll be setting up distribution routes for overseas shipping containers of relief supplies and medicines that will follow from Rescue Task Force and World Emergency Relief. The cargo and supplies are donated, but the freight bill must be paid. Bex told East County Magazine that $12,000 can deliver $6 million worth of life-saving medicine. He asked for prayers for his team of rescue workers, as well as for the persecuted Iraqi Christians. If you would like more information or want to know how to make a donation? You can visit www.rescuetaskforce.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.